We're talking about a tricky balance here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The virus is spiking. It's hard to get kids to understand social distancing. As parents struggle to balance childcare and work, kids may struggle with isolation and screen time overload. How much has your screen use increased during the pandemic? Do you live with a so-called screenager, as they say, and find it tough to get their eyes off their devices? Do you have Zoom fatigue from too many video meetings? We're at 800-642-1234. Melissa Westendorf is a clinical and forensic psychologist and co-founder of the Technology Wellness Center in Mequon. Melissa, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me and talking about this topic.
Well, it seems like the words technology and wellness don't fit well together. How do you make them compatible?
Well, it's all about balance. Technology is here to stay, obviously, and it's a form of entertainment. It's what we do in our life to do practically everything. And so my goal has always been, how do we do it with a balance, a healthy balance?
And where do we start to strike that balance? What should we start looking at in our lives?
You know, it's this whole pandemic has thrown things into disarray. And so, you know, we really have to look at how does it affect our individual children and does it impact them in ways like school or socially, behaviorally, before we decide what we need to do to take the next step to make things balance.
So we need to really first survey our personal scene and kind of see how each individual in the household is using screens, using devices and gadgets. How have you seen the pandemic change the way and the frequency of how we use phones and tablets and computers?
Well, I think as we were settling into our quarantine, a lot of people were just permitting, and myself included. I mean, you know, I was trying to figure out how to manage all of this. You know, screen time went up, and it certainly went up for all of the adults in the room as well, being if we were lucky enough to stay working and we could work at home, all of our screen time went up. So, you know, I think that's what's been happening. And I think also parents were initially sort of freaking out about, like, how do I manage this? Because I can't let them be on a screen all day.
Right. You can't let them be on a screen all day. And yet maybe these parents are working their jobs at home and they can't break away. They're in meetings during the day. So, you know, what do you do in those situations? My kids are playing Xbox quite a bit more than I would like them to be.
Yeah. I mean, that's the same in my house. I mean, what we tried to do, and it wasn't always successful just because of our meetings or whatever we might be doing, is trying to put it into chunks. You know, the old adage is 2 hours a day, which almost seems laughable at this point with what's been going on. But if you can do 2 hours in chunks and then get your kids to do 2 hours of something else, getting them out. Now, at least we can go outside. Early on, it was so cold outside, it was difficult to get them to go out. But so chunking it, I think, is probably our best bet at this point.
When you chunk it up for different age groups, exposure to screens can be very different for a toddler versus a teenager. What is that spectrum like?
Well, you know, frankly, I would still, for a toddler, I would be very hesitant to do much screen time. And if I was going to do it, I'd almost want to do it on the television instead of putting it on a little screen in front of them. And part of the reason is physical. Eye strength, if growing eyes are focused too much, like right at the palm of your hand, you know, only 12 inches away, that can really impinge upon the development of those muscles in the eye, and which can lead to needing glasses earlier than might have been anticipated. So with toddlers, I'm still fairly strong with not a lot of screen time. But, you know, as kids get older, of course, it's entertainment, right? We have to think about screen time as entertainment for them, and they certainly needed some entertaining.
And then you layer on schoolwork on top of that.
I was just going to say that you layer on the online learning that everybody had to go to, and it's difficult. So again, chunking it for kids, I think, is the best way to at least give their brains, their eyes, their attention some a break.
We're talking with Melissa Westendorf. She's a clinical and forensic psychologist, co-founder of the Technology Wellness Center. We're looking at the impact of screens on our lives and how to help kids in this time. You can join in. What kinds of rules do you have for your children about screen time? Do you worry your kids are getting too much screen time? How do you balance it? What are some tricks you use to get them off screens? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Melissa, step back for us, if you will. When did the medical community begin to realize that too much screen time was a problem? When did they start to see this?
Well, really, the research came out of Asia because they early on considered this a public health emergency. The internet was really available in the public domain. So you'd go to an internet cafe. And so they were seeing kids or emerging adults sitting in cafes for hours and hours. I mean, 24 hours and having a lot of difficulty. So they considered it a public health emergency. And as that research grew, then it, you know, spread out from Asia. And, you know, the Pediatric Association has tried to weigh in. They've recently altered their message again, I think, to accommodate just the realization that screens are going to be a part of our lives and it's just about managing them. So, I mean, boy, at least 10 years, but it's really in its relative infancy. And I don't dismiss the fact that some people just don't think it's a problem. They think the research is, you know, say equivocal, that there's some good and some bad and the verdict's still kind of out. And I don't want to make the mistake that it is harmful. So I'm not going to do anything about it to control it.
Well, in your practice, in your practice, what are some things that you see as can be tied to the effects of screen time? What are some psychological effects?
Right. So we have seen emotional difficulties, behavioral problems. I mean, you certainly can. I've seen kids or emerging adults, so young in their 20s. I see them have the same type of addictive response as to, say, other drugs. I mean, it certainly gets the dopamine flowing in the head or in the brain, I should say. So I've seen, unfortunately, because I'm primarily a forensic psychologist, I've seen a lot on the criminal end where they end up engaging in behavior that's against the law. And at that point, it felt too late. Not that they couldn't make changes, but that there were significant consequences for these individuals for a very long time in their life, which is really what motivated me to start saying, hey, what's really going on for these individuals with technology?
What is going on in terms of their social skill development?
Right. Early on, if they are spending way too much time on technology, they don't develop the interpersonal skills we'd like them to have to interact with individuals in a healthy way or a way that's comfortable for them. You know, it's not a use it or lose it, but if we want kids' brains to grow and develop those interpersonal skills, they have to use them, right? And to do that, they have to be involved with other kids face to face. I know you can play Xbox and you're talking with your friends, which has probably been great during this quarantine. At least they've been talking with their
right.
Friends.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
We're exploring extra screen time and stress with the upheaval caused by the pandemic. Psychologist Melissa Westendorf is our guide. Do you worry your kids are spending too much time on screens? How do you balance it? Are you battling a technology addiction yourself? How are you coping? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Melissa Westendorf here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about screen time here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. So one recent survey found nearly a third of our country's workforce has children at home. Many Wisconsin kids were able to keep their school-issued Chromebooks for the summer. The upside, they've dabbled in the educational learning programs we find at our house, like Lexia, Typing Without Tears, Khan Academy in the evenings. Downside is the whole internet out there, all the YouTube stars like Ryan's World that my little ones get hooked on. How are you managing screen time this summer? Do you worry about screen addiction for yourself or your friends or family? Join in 800-642-1234. We have psychologist Melissa Westendorf, who stays with us from the Technology Wellness Center. Melissa, let's look at some physical effects of screens. What are the detrimental physical effects of too much screen time?
Well, I touched on it briefly, the eyes. It can really cause a lot of problems. The blue light that's emitted from screens really ages the retinas. And so for whatever reason, we don't blink when we're looking at a computer screen. So our eyes will dry out. I know I've certainly suffered some repercussions of using a lot of screen time with my eyes because that's part of my job. I write a lot of reports. Some of the other things that we'll see is, you know, it can cause neck problems because of the way that we hold the screens, which is where I'm kind of concerned with kids is a lot of it, they do it on their phones and they're not holding their phone in front of their face where it's up, you know, and they're looking level, they're always looking down. And so that can cause problems with headaches or migraines, certainly just neck pains. You know, you see stuff with their thumbs, you know, the old gaming thumb or whatever you want to call it. So there's lots of physical issues that can develop because of these. And I think one of the more robust ones is the sleep problem. And when you don't get enough sleep, you can have all sorts of emotional problems and, you know, excessive fatigue. And, you know, so you see one problem, lack of sleep, can just manifest in very different ways.
You mean as they spend more time on screens, that can actually affect their inability to fall asleep at night?
Right, right. So it used to be that we thought screens would prevent melatonin naturally being released in your body for up to an hour. And so it was always, you know, shut off the phone or the screen an hour before you go to bed. But there has been more recent research that indicates it's anywhere from 2 to 4 hours. And so while a child may fall asleep, they are not getting the great sleep that they need. And, you know, a long time ago, research said that for TVs that are in a child's room, on average, they get about 20 or so minutes less of sleep each night, which over time becomes cumulative for a child. And it affects learning. I mean, we just know sleep is so important for kids and adults.
I'm also concerned about the weight gain and the inability to get enough exercise as they spend more time on screens and computers.
Yeah, that is certainly an effect. You know, it's an object at rest, lays at rest, right? I mean, I think we've all experienced that all of a sudden, whoa, 30 minutes, 60 minutes, an hour and a half has gone by and I haven't done anything. And that's just not good for us. We need to be active and moving. And so I don't, you know, I'm not saying that a kid shouldn't sit there for 2 hours if they've been doing some other things. I mean, it's okay to do that. There are certainly times when they can do that, but we just have to be mindful. And I know it's difficult because that it ends up, especially now while we're home, nagging them to get out of the house or nagging them to do something, which, you know, frankly, sometimes you just don't want to do.
We're exploring screen use and its effect on kids and adults with Melissa Westendorf. She's a clinical and forensic psychologist, co-founder of the Technology Wellness Center based in Wisconsin. You can join in with your questions. What do you think about the increase screen time kids have during the virtual learning last spring? Do you worry about screen addiction for yourself? Do you know someone who is really addicted to their phone or computer? How much of your screen use is driven by social media? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Melissa, do you see any difference in how adults handle heavy screen use versus how children handle the use of overuse of screens?
You know, I'd have to say I have adults that have had similar issues. We that have come in front of me in terms of criminal behavior, that they talk about how it gets away from them, and they might still be functioning going to work, but then it's in their off hours that that's all they do. They'll sit there for 6, 7, 8 hours on their screens. And so, certainly it can affect them in the same way. The exception is it's more concerning for me with kids because of the development of the brain. There's just an explosion in the brain of growth until about the age of 25. And, that sets the pattern for that child, going into adulthood. And so that's where I address my concern and really, trying to help parents find that balance for their kids.
Could screen addiction be an issue in children leading to things like obsessive or addictive behavior?
Certainly. I mean, it's, I don't want to be too dramatic, but sometimes I think about it as sort of the gateway because of what happens to the brain. Are we really setting kids up to have other addictions later in life? We've set them up to really have that reward system enhanced in their brain. And it might lead to other things that can have a lot of repercussions as well, whether it's financially, socially, criminally, in the cases where I've seen this happen. So, absolutely.
I'm also concerned when you and when it's time to power down, shut off those devices, and trying to give them the, all right, 5 more minutes, okay, 2 more minutes, and some of those signals like now is the time that we need to unplug here, and there can still be tantrums. How do you work through that changing, time, the sequencing of changing to a new thing?
That is really, really hard, and I've struggled with all different types of it's absolutely at this time, or you get this much time. And what I've sort of settled on is, all right, you get 10 more minutes or 5 more minutes or 1 more game, right? Because if you a lot of the games that they're playing average like 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 10 minutes. And so if you can tell them, okay, you got 3 minutes plus 1 more game. Right, one more episode, whatever it is. I found that my kids have been able to shut it off a little bit easier. That if I just say 3 minutes and they're in the middle of building something, then they do not want to let go.
Right. So really kind of working with the rhythm of whatever they are doing on that screen. I want to look at for a moment a video game study. The journal Developmental Psychologist recently published a study on children's relationship to video games. What are we seeing there with the use of video games and how children are using them?
Well, there is really good news in this study. About 72%. What they did is they tracked these adolescents. Average age of the start of the study was about 15, and they tracked them for 6 years. So this was a great prospective study. And what they found is about three quarters had a non-pathological use. So that means that they didn't have a lot of symptoms related to overusing technology or, and then they measured them emotionally, looking for anxiety, aggression, all these different measures over the course of the 6 years. And so there was this large group that didn't start with any issues and they didn't end with any issues. So that's really good, right? But there was a small minority, about 10%, which was at the other end. So when they measured them initially, they had some moderate symptoms of technology overuse. And as they measured them on those same measures, anxiety, aggression, shyness, it looked as though that not only did their screen use increase into emerging adulthood, but they also had increased issues with those things that I just talked about. And then there was about, I'd say, about 20% that they found that started with moderate symptoms of technology overuse and then just kind of stayed there. Like they didn't fluctuate at all. And so there's a lot of good news in that study. The vast majority of us won't have to really worry too much. But there is, I think it's a significant minority when you have about 10% who really do demonstrate some of these issues. And what was nice is it showed that there possibly is a causal link, because they were able to hold constant at time one, and they saw the difference at time six for this 10% group.
Oh, okay. So they were really able to, follow this group and pinpoint exactly what those symptoms were to the video games. Psychologist Melissa Westendorf is our guide. Two tablets and laptops, how to manage screen time with kids. How much of your screen use is driven by social media? How has your child's screen use changed during the pandemic? What do you do to offset heavy screen use for yourself or your child? Do you model behavior in front of them? What is that like? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in after this news update with Melissa Westendorf right here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing screen overload and what to do about it here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Common Sense Media is a nonprofit that tracks young people's tech habits. Its report late last year found kids between 8 and 12 spend almost 5 hours a day on screens. Teens average more than 7 hours, and that wasn't including time spent using screens for school or homework. How are they using their devices differently now? Are your tweens or teens on their tablets and computers more often since the pandemic set in? What changes do you see? And what changes do you see in your own screen use? Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. Melissa Westendorf is a clinical and forensic psychologist in Mequon, and she stays with us. Melissa, when you look for moderate symptoms in video game users, what are some common symptoms of screen overload? What does that look like?
Well, for each kid, it is certainly different. One of the first things you're looking for to see if it really is impacting your child is when you do take them off, what kind of, do you get a rage response? All kids want to be on it. They'll all complain getting off. They might even all yell about having to get off, or think you're the worst mom in the world and all that. But do they go into rage? How do they respond once they're off for a couple minutes? The other things that for moderate symptoms, maybe you start to see them sliding away from hanging out with people. You start to see them really losing time, like, oh, gee, it's 3 hours later and you haven't done the things I've asked you to do. But they're still social and, they still do hang out with kids or friends from time to time. So, moderate symptoms can vary widely. And so it's really about how is it impacting your child, meaning does it affect one area of their life? I mean, for some kids, their grades really suffered because they were not getting enough sleep and they were, they were just so fatigued during school that they couldn't even absorb any more knowledge from the teachers because it was they were just so fatigued. So, I'd like it to be like this really neat, shiny, bright line of what's a moderate and what's high symptoms. But it just doesn't work that way. It's so different for every kid. And I know that makes it difficult to assess, but you know your family best. And so you know if things are starting to encroach upon the healthy functioning of your family.
Yeah, unhealthy behaviors. Let's bring in a call now. Martin is with us from Junction City. Hi, Martin.
Hello. I'm hearing all this talk about Xbox. The most intelligent thing you can get for your kid is a drone. He's going to get outside. It's the highest technology thing today that you can have.
Oh, have you had experience with drones, Martin?
I have five drones, and 30% of drones are flyaway or crashes, so you have to study them real hard, see what's going on.
Yeah.
And I used to spend a lot of time in front of the computer. I used to trade stocks for about 5 years. I finally ended up with a sciatica, and I couldn't sit there anymore. So now I'm flying drones.
Oh, Martin, thank you for bringing that to the table. And Melissa, it sounds like, you know, drone would be an outdoor hobby, you know, flying kites or finding some outdoor activities would also be, you know, certainly in that area.
Yeah, that's a creative use. It has incorporates technology and it incorporates all other types of important skills when we're outside and with, you know, with the flying, you're trying to judge depth perception. And yeah, I mean, that's a creative use of getting kids outside, but still being able to, you know, technology is just so enticing and it's so entertaining. And it's a great way to incorporate both of those aspects without them just looking at a screen.
Do you find, Melissa, is there any benefit to a child's screen use? Is there an upside?
Well, certainly there are programs out there. I think you mentioned something like Khan Academy. You know, certainly there are teaching tools out there. There are ways to get your kids to know about the world. And there's all this educational material out there. So it is really about making solid choices for them, helping them make solid choices, especially when they're younger. You know, I always say the earlier you can implement these rules, even as they're, you know, just starting to use technology, the easier it'll be when they're 12, 13, 14, 15. It's not going to be super easy, but it'll be a little bit easier. So yeah, there's certainly good programming out there. And I don't ever want to diminish that.
Well, I want to shift to adults for a moment, adults with kids. And I know I'm very aware of when I have my phone out and I'm looking at it and not paying attention to what, you know, one of my kids is saying to me and I feel bad. And so I'm wondering, as adults, how should we be aware of how we use our phones around our kids?
We really need to structure ourselves. We're adults. We can set, give ourselves a structured time and where we say, literally, I'm walking away from my phone. I mean, I think a lot of us get in the habit, especially, you know, with work emails and whatever important calls we need to be taking, to having the phone with us all the time. But I found, and I even find relief in it, of leaving my phone in a different room, because when it's out of mind, out of sight, actually, it can have some benefits. I mean, there's research talking about even if your phone is off, it's turned upside down. When they were testing people to do some complex strategies or computations, when the phone was present, just present, they did not do as well as those that didn't have the phone around them. And so really choosing, being thoughtful about when can I just take this phone away, because you're also modeling, like, we can have really good interactions, we can do things, and we don't need to have the technology around.
I know one of my little ones will come up and say, Mom, where's your phone? And I'll look and say, I have no idea where it is. And, you know, part of that sometimes is very true. I don't know where I left it, or, you know, set it down in the house. But, you know, certainly trying to show them that it's not central to my life, so it shouldn't be central to yours. You know, just those little things, I think, can go a long way.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, half the time, I think it's my memory that I can't find my phone. But yeah, certainly just that does really show that it's not all encompassing. It's not the most important thing in our world. We're going to give you this dedicated time. And I think it's refreshing for our brains too, because we are really using technology so much that it's impacting us in ways that I don't think we ever anticipated.
We're examining what all this screen time does to our health and well-being with Melissa Westendorf. She's a clinical and forensic psychologist, co-founder of the Technology Wellness Center. It's based in Mequon. And there is room for you in this conversation. Are you getting outside more now to counteract the screen time? Maybe you're flying drones or starting a new hobby outdoors. How do you get away from screens? Do you have a plan to dial back screen use? Do you keep track of how much you and your family are in front of screens? What do those numbers tell you? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Melissa, as so many families have moved their work to home, there is something called Zoom fatigue. What are you seeing in that arena?
Yeah, I think what that is it's a sort of a collection of physical and emotional symptoms from being on the screen. I think people, they're walking around less, right? They have to, they can't talk to a person face to face, so they have to be on their screen. And if they're not set up ergonomically at home to do that, we were all just thrown into working at home without really being able to be thoughtful about what our home workstation looks like. And it can really, after sitting 8 hours and you're just looking at your screen and you're not ergonomically correct, meaning, the screen's not at eye level or the camera's not at eye level. So you always have a bend in your neck or in your back, that manifests in these physical problems. And over time, I think that it can affect you emotionally, like, oh, I don't want to get on the screen. And it's tiring. There's something to that blue light that really affects us that can be tiring.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a collection of those symptoms.
There's also that interpersonal communication. You have to read more on a screen, the inflection of someone's voice, or what are they really trying to say during that Zoom meeting. So that is another layer, I would imagine, to all of
Oh.
these conferences.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I think about, because I get frustrated by technology, initially it was difficult to connect via Zoom or whatever platform you were doing because everybody was on the internet. I know I had to up my internet speed, and so that was really frustrating. So the last thing you really want to be is listening to somebody cut in and out. And so yeah, it just to kind of pull it apart from maybe the quarantine fatigue that people experienced or the isolation that people experienced as well, that's separate from technology. But I think there really was something going on and probably still is going on for individuals who were just so confined. They didn't have the contact with their coworkers. And I know, I work with therapists, and therapists were telling me they are in the helping profession because they like that contact with people and being able to interact with people and help them. And that, not that they're not still helping people, but they lost that person to
Personal
person.
connection. Did
Yeah.
you move to telehealth to see your patients who have issues with screens?
I did for the ones who were still in the community. Yes, I did. Wanting to respect everybody's personal safety. I did move to it, and there are times when it went well, and there's other frustrating times. And it changes things. It changes the interpersonal dynamic, certainly when you're on a screen.
We're learning how to limit screen time for young people and what we should think about as parents try to balance the online videos, the games. Do you keep track of how much you and your family is in front of a screen? Have you relaxed your rules around screens due to the pandemic and the change in your household? Still time to talk about this. 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with psychologist Melissa Westendorf right here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. In April, the World Health Organization issued strict guidelines on how often parents should turn to videos and online games to entertain or educate the kids. The WHO's recommendation, infants younger than one should never be in front of screens. Toddlers and pre-K kids, no more than 1 hour each day in front of screens. Do you keep a schedule for your child when they can be in front of a device? Do you stick with it? What's your advice for how to get kids off of screens? Still time for your thoughts. 800-642-1234. Melissa Westendorf is a psychologist in Mequon, and she stays with us. So, Melissa, let's look at the issue around bedtime. I know I use my phone as an alarm clock, so it's there next to me on the nightstand. Last night, there was an Amber Alert that went off at 11:15 at night, and I sat up straight in bed because it's like the sound of an alarm clock.
Yes.
What do you think about having a phone as an alarm?
I don't encourage it. I encourage people to go out and buy the good old standard alarm clock and use that, because it's just so tempting for that to be the last thing you look at and the first thing you look at in the morning. And so if you can make it just a regular old alarm clock that maybe you have to get out of bed and shut off, then that's a great way to get you up as opposed to now scrolling through your Gmail account for another hour.
Or social media. How much of our screen issues can be related? Yeah, how much of that is related to social media? We haven't really touched on that.
Yeah, I think it's a part of the, obviously it's a part of the puzzle. Males and females use technology in different ways. Girls tend to use social media a little bit more, but I think it's pretty even. They just use it in different ways. And so I think you can go down the abyss of social media and not come out on the other side till a couple hours later. And so really, as adults, at least, if we can set our own, okay, I'm not going to look at Facebook or Twitter or whatever it might be until this time. You know, I know some people who say, I'm not going to even look at my phone until the start of my workday, which is 8 a.m. Whatever strategy works for you. You know, I even recommend, I think on some of the newer phones, you can turn all the brilliant color off. And that might make it less enticing because it is the colors and the actions and that keep us just drawn to looking at technology for entertainment purposes. So if you can make some of those subtle changes, you might be able to decrease your use. I know on my phone, I try and look at, you know, now they have programming that tells you how much you've used and the percent change from the week before. And I always try, I'm not always successful. I absolutely admit this, but I try to decrease my percent each week. It's just like, it's just one little strategy that
little
I try
to use. Little competition, yeah, with yourself.
Right, right.
Well, what differences do you see among girls and boys in their use of social media? What does the research say?
Well, originally it showed that, you know, the boys were more into the gaming. And in fact, even this recent study that we talked about earlier, one of the predictors or one of the identifiers that said what group you were in, that it was being male, predicted that you were both in the increasing and moderate groups of gaming use. So that was originally the big difference. But really, you know, boys are also creeping up on social media use. I mean, there's just YouTube has really, I think, kind of changed the playing field in terms of everybody is looking at YouTube for whatever they're interested in. So I think things have, you know, what I want to say, equaled out a little bit or are more similar.
How do we give our eyes a break? What are some exercises we can do?
You know, I just tell people to get their eyes off the screens. I mean, for adults who have to be on it, there's that 20-20-20 rule that people are probably familiar with. You know, every 20 minutes, you should look away for 20 seconds at about 20 feet. And that's just because you have to blink. And when we're on the computer, for whatever reason, I'm sure there's some medical reason, we just don't seem to blink. And so I've even from time to time have put a little sticky note saying blink on my computer because we don't blink. Some of the other things, especially for kids or even adults, I should say, you can buy computer glasses. Certainly they have some ones that actually look pretty normal. You can work in the, you can use in the workplace. I just bought the cheap $8. They're kind of safety glasses. I look like I'm, you know, going to go hunting or drilling for something, but it does get rid of the blue light, which is what affects our eyes so much. And so anything you can do, any kind of program you can download that changes the blue light as you know, you approach nighttime, the better. are some of the best strategies, other than just not looking at it, are some of the best strategies to help your eyes.
We're spending the hour talking about screen use, being on gadgets and devices all day, how that affects our health, especially a child's health. Melissa Westendorf is a clinical and forensic psychologist, co-founder of the Technology Wellness Center, and she is our guide. Melissa, how should we unwind after a long day or a long session in front of a screen? What would you suggest?
Well, anything but being on a screen, right? If you can get yourself outdoors, you know, go for walks, you know, there's lots of really good research about how nature is good for keeping us, what I say, centered, or, you know, kind of bringing us back to getting away from the noise of our entertainment or our work. And so I try and do those things myself, trying to, especially during this quarantine time, ensuring that I walk the dog at least once a day, get outside. Like during lunch hour, don't then go to your phone to look at the news. You know, I think people have a habit of that. Like, oh, I'm going to eat at my desk, but I'm going to still be on my screen because I'm going to read the paper. Actually, reading a real paper is kind of nice. Having a real magazine is kind of nice. But just giving yourself a break and being able to, you know, I like to listen to podcasts. That's been one way to get myself off a screen. I'm still being entertained and I'm finding out, you know, information, and it's not something that's taxing on my eyes.
Household noise is another issue I've noticed in recent months. It's just louder around our house. Everyone's home, and I'm just like kind of searching for any type of quiet or just a place where I don't hear something. What effect does household noise have on our well-being?
Well, we certainly have to have some moments of quiet. And think about, even for kids, they need moments of quiet. And so being able to find times where you do just sort of shut everything down, or, and especially if your kids can see you doing this, then they might even partake, or if you can do this together, it's sort of, you have that din, just that constant humming in your head. And at some point you just need like it all to stop. And so that's, you know, if you can take those breaks, get outside and listen to nature's noise, so to speak, which has been a little louder actually these last couple months as we're outside less, is very helpful for people.
Where do you think the research on screens is headed next?
Well, that's really interesting. I suspect that there's a lot of research that's taking place right now, especially due to the pandemic. It's a natural experiment, so to speak, because we had this force on the outside that seemed to press it into, you know, more screen time for people. So I would say we might start seeing research in the next couple of years coming out. You know, you have to remember it takes a long time to get through research and get it published. But I bet there is a lot of research that's going to be coming out in terms of like really how is, you know, have our levels raised and what is the outcome for those levels. But again, you're looking 5-6 years down the road before you get outcome data.
Melissa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Melissa Westendorf is a clinical and forensic psychologist, co-founder of the Technology Wellness Center that is based in Mequon. If you missed any part of the conversation, you can stream it later on at wpr.org/mornings. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.